This is Bishop Phoebe Rofe of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. We are broadcasting live on 91.7 FM from Crosstown Concourse in Memphis, and each week we have the opportunity to interview an interesting guest to learn more about their life and their ministry and the role of faith in their life. And each Thursday morning, we start with a saint of the day. And so today, which happens to be May the 19th, is actually the feast day for Dunstan, an Archbishop of Canterbury who served in the 10th century. Dunstan was born, we think, in the year 909 into a family with royal connections, and he became a monk. And then became a bishop, and then finally, in the year 960, was Archbishop of Canterbury. Dunstan was definitely a leader in the church, and one of the phrases used to describe him is a contemplative in action. That brings to mind for me the powerful ministry of Richard Rohr, who is a current day Roman Catholic priest who has a center for action and contemplation. Both Richard Rohr and Dunstan understood that the life of prayer may begin either in a monastery or in a church building, but it doesn't end there, that it's relevant when it's brought to address the immediate concerns of people in their everyday life. And so Dunstan was part of a revival or reform movement that included seeking better education for clergy. They worked to end the landed family interest in the church. They did the restoration of lots of monasteries which had fallen into disrepair, and they established some new ones. They revived monastic life for women so that women religious would also have that opportunity. And they also were engaged in liturgical reform. This reform movement that Dunstan was a part of was set forth in a document called the Monastic Agreement, which is basically a common code for English monasteries that was done in about the year 970. And it was about intercession for the royal house. Of course, we're talking about the Church of England at this point, and emphasized the close tie between those in monasteries and the crown. I appreciate Dunstan's connection of a life of faith with the concerns beyond just a person's spiritual health, but indeed all aspects of life. And in that regard, Dunstan was very much following in the example of Jesus Christ, because Jesus was concerned about far more than people's souls during his earthly ministry. If Jesus encountered someone who was hungry, he fed them. If he encountered someone who wasn't able to walk, he heal them. Or if someone didn't have physical sight or was suffering from some sort of psychological or emotional turmoil, today what we might consider a form of mental illness, Jesus had a holistic approach to ministry. And so Dunstan, in his role as the Archbishop of Canterbury, very much continued that line of thought. And I think it's a great pattern for us to have in our lives today. So the prayer that is assigned for the feast day of Saint Dunstan is as followed. Direct your church, O Lord, into the beauty of holiness, that following the good example of your servant Dunstan, we may honor your Son Jesus Christ with our lips and in our lives, to the glory of his name, who lives and reigns with you and the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. So for those of you who have been listening to Faithfully Memphis for a while, we have been on the air since October of 2020. It's one of the amazing things that happened in the midst of the pandemic. We had the opportunity to be one of the inaugural shows on WYXR, a new nonprofit radio station, community-based, that is a partnership of the Daily Memphian and the University of Memphis. And generally, there is a guest. But we thought this morning that Emily Austin and I, Emily is our Director of Communications at the Diocese, Minister of Communications, would kind of reflect on the past year and a half of this show and just share a little bit about where we are right now. So, Emily, welcome to Faithfully Memphis.
Hey, thanks, Bishop. I mean, what an honor. What an honor it is to be here on this show that has kind of become my right arm.
Yep. And you and I have been at the table from the very beginning.
Yeah, Bishop, I remember in back in 2019 when I was interviewing for this job to work in your office, and I was pitching these huge ideas for what we could bring to the to communications for the diocese, and I said, "Oh, you know, it would be so great if we had a podcast." and at the time, I had no idea how to make that happen. It was kind of one of those things that you mm-hmm. pitch in a job interview because it's like, okay, well, I may as well manifest this. We're just going to manifest it and maybe it'll come to fruition. Yep. And then I had no clue. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of radio, but mm-hmm. I certainly didn't know at the time what it took to put a show together like this. And then we had this wonderful manna from heaven fall down.
We did.
From WYXR, and I remember you came to mm-hmm. me and said, "Hey, guess what? We have this opportunity to have an hour every week on mm-hmm. this new station that is forming." And I said, "Okay, well, now I gotta start delivering on some exactly. campaign promises, I guess."
Exactly.
But what a joy. We were reflecting off the air about what a blessing this show has been mm-hmm. to us as
yes.
individuals.
Yeah. We've learned so much about the region. And I tell you, maybe there are no coincidences, Emily, but my aunt and I were at dinner in March of 2020.
I remember.
And we went to the bar area of the restaurant, and we were there a little bit early.
Were y'all at Bishop?
We were at Bishop.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm sorry, I just had to bring that up because it is
we
the most
were
perfect
at the restaurant
perfect place.
Named
yeah.
Bishop.
Yeah.
My aunt took me there for my birthday, and there was a young man playing like old school DJ. I mean, mm-hmm. like with the turntables mm-hmm. and the vinyl.
Yeah.
In the lobby. And we went up to him and struck up a conversation. And during the course of that conversation, my aunt mentioned that I was the newly elected and consecrated Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee.
Those of y'all who know Mary know that she did that.
She definitely did that.
She is tooting her sweet niece's horn.
Yeah,
because her sweet niece will not toot that horn on
well,
her that, own
that's
behalf.
That's a whole nother thing. Yeah. But anyway, Jared Boyd, who was the young man as the DJ, happened to mention, "Well, you know, this is just a side gig. My real job is I'm a reporter for the Daily Memphian. And if you're new to the area, now remember, this is March, early March mm-hmm. of 2020.
Yeah.
So COVID had not hit. And he said, "I would love to interview you at some point."
Yeah.
And so when COVID did hit, like a couple of weeks later, mm-hmm. he reached out a couple of months later to interview me about how the diocese was adjusting and our congregations to everything having to do with COVID. And during that interview, he mentioned, we're starting a community-based radio show in the fall. Would the Diocese of West Tennessee like to be one of the inaugural shows? And we thought, what a great evangelism opportunity. And so we jumped on it. And so, Emily, you know, we're both Episcopalians. And I'm wondering, when you hear the word evangelism, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I want to take that a couple steps back. We are both Episcopalians, but our story, your story and my story, and the way that we found ourselves in these positions where we are, you know, serving the church in a professional and personal capacity are very different. I am not what you would call a cradle Episcopalian. I came to this denomination, which we are a denominational faith. Mm-hmm. That means that there's a lot of other churches that are like us within our governance structure. Mm-hmm. Think of denominations like the Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, the Lutheran Church, mm-hmm. the Methodist Church. We are a collective. I came to this denomination from a evangelistic background where a faith tradition where we were very, very comfortable sharing our stories. It was part of what you do mm-hmm. as a Christian. You're really effusive and you're ready to wax poetic about the work that God is doing in your life and what he has done for you and all that kind of stuff. So this was not something that is different for me. It's something that's kind of baked in for me. But I think that, you know, when I sort of nestled, one of the reasons why I was so called to this denomination and personally why it was a good fit for me was that, there was also, it wasn't all about me and Jesus all mm-hmm. the time. It was, mm-hmm. it is. I mean, a personal relationship, if you want to call it that, mm-hmm. With God is important. But so much of what the Episcopal Church means to me is living my faith in community, mm-hmm. living it in a way that I am in community and I am doing good work, doing the work of God and, you know, lifting up the people who he has called us to serve. Mm-hmm. So there's a heavier community emphasis than I grew up with. And anyway, so all that said, evangelism is something that I'm used to. Mm-hmm. It's something that you're used to too, just as you're a what they call a cradle Episcopalian. This is not something that is new to you.
Right.
You have always been
in the Episcopal Church. I have. And yet I understand that sometimes Episcopalians can be a little shy or perhaps even uncomfortable with even the concept of evangelism.
And I will be bold and say that it is something that it's a dirty word.
Mm-hmm. The E word.
And we talked about that. You talked about that on a show. I think it was either, oh man, all these shows.
They can blend together.
But we talked about that with a Methodist pastor at the end of mm-hmm. last year about how it can get to be in our denomination, it's kind of a dirty word. And I think it's because there's a lot of reasons for it. And we do not have time mm-hmm. this morning to talk about why Episcopalians are so why they get nervous when they hear the word evangelism. Maybe they have an idea of, maybe they have that mental picture of the guy, you know, standing on a street corner with a megahorn and mm-hmm. and a sign yelling epithets and telling people he doesn't know
that they're going to hell.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I can see how evangelism, that it definitely puts that image. But in people's minds. But at the end of the day, what is evangelism?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I ask that question a lot. Y'all, what we're doing just by being in community and by being out in the world and working towards equity and love and care and sharing our stories. And it doesn't have to be this, I'm going to take you to lunch and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to testify. You can do that also. You can mm-hmm. do that if it's an appropriate time to do it,
mm-hmm.
if it's the right scenario. But it is just being positive and signaling towards, and I'm pointing,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm gesturing because I talk with my hands. We're pointing to the Holy Spirit working in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be this packaged, just mean-spirited thing.
Mm-hmm. Or judgmental. You know, I think for me, it's being a fellow pilgrim,
yep.
a fellow journeyer. And it does take some vulnerability to yeah. be willing to share your story,
yeah.
But not in the hopes that the person is going to completely agree with you or
yeah.
become Episcopalian or maybe not even become a Christian. My thought is, if I'm the only experience that that individual has had of God on this particular day, I really hope they walked away from their interaction with me and it's been positive.
Yeah.
And if we have joy about where we are in our lives, not a fake kind of, oh, I've got the biggest house or, mm-hmm. you know, my family's doing so well or I'm moving up the promotion ladder, not that, or, you know, my bank account, not that kind yeah. of posturing.
Oh, yeah.
But if we have a true sense of joy and contentment and peace and an appreciation and a gratitude for what God has done for us, other people may then say to us, wow, you know, you seem really centered. What did you do? Like, how did you get there? And that could be an opportunity to just share your journey. And so yeah. for me,
and to share your struggle.
And because, to share your struggle. That's because, right, because it's not been a straight line.
No, I mean, whenever I'm a naturally pretty optimistic person, and I think people can tell that when they meet me. But when people ask me, usually I wear my heart on my sleeve, mm-hmm. and if someone asks me, how are you doing? If I'm not doing well, I'll share that.
Yeah.
To the extent that it's appropriate mm-hmm. in that context.
Mm-hmm.
And being real that, you know, our lives are great, but there are things that are hard.
Yep,
there
definitely.
Are things that are hard.
Yep.
Bishop, you know, I'm in a very privileged position because I get to work for the bishop and I get to share, you know, this office suite with you when you're in town, which you're traveling a lot.
I am now.
Now that the pandemic is mm-hmm. Kind of, we're on a course that it's manageable. And sometimes we'll be in your office and we'll just be kind of having a discussion about, oh, this happened and that mm-hmm. happened. We see, and you and I, we tend to want to talk about those big things in the mm-hmm. world that we're seeing that are very troublesome and extremely right. problematic right. and the fear that we have when we see those things happen. And a lot of times I don't know how to punctuate those conversations. And you know what I always say? I'm always like, well, that's why we need Jesus.
Of course. Of course.
Like, life is hard.
Right.
And things are wrong. Mm-hmm. We live in a broken world. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need, that's why we need God.
Yeah.
And that's why we need each other.
Yeah. And you don't need to have a degree in theology Mm-mm. to be an evangelist.
No.
I think evangelism Mm-mm. is something that we are commissioned to do by virtue of our baptism.
Yes.
And of course, you know, our presiding bishop, Michael Curry, has described himself as the chief evangelism officer, the CEO of the Episcopal Church, our denominational structure. Mm-hmm. And he is someone who has such joy in his life that has been infectious. You know, other people have been drawn to him just because of the joy that he goes through life with. And so to think about sharing a little bit of your story, this radio show,
yeah.
all of these are different examples of evangelism. And as you mentioned, Emily, given all the significant things that our community in the Diocese of West Tennessee, which is, you know, 21 counties, and this region and our country and the world, given all of the stuff that we're dealing with, man, I think people are looking.
Yeah, they are. And one of the things that we've done on this show, you know, going back to those first moments where we were, you know, you and I and Jeff Hewlett, who really helped us.
Absolutely. Shout out to Jeff.
I mean, Jeff, good grief. I don't know how I could have done this. Without him. But we were sitting around the conference table in our office talking about what this show would be. And one of the things that we knew we would want to have is this central conversation, in each episode where we're talking with someone who is, there's an element of faith in their life and the work that, and how that element informs the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And that has not only been a way for us to see the amazing, beautiful work that the Holy Spirit, or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
how it's binding us all together, because we see in the testimonies that, and I don't even know if people would call it a testimony. A lot of times it's just a conversation. I think that's what evangelism mm-hmm. is. It's a conversation. Mm-hmm. But when we have folks on this show sharing their life and sharing the way that their faith has informed their work, that's evangelism mm-hmm. right there. It doesn't have to, you don't have to have a pitch at the end.
Right.
The reason why we want to get to know the people in our community, both here in Shelby County and Memphis and all over, is because God is doing amazing work
mm-hmm.
everywhere. And he does it in very personal ways. And I mm-hmm. think that's what we've seen through these conversations that we've had with people. And Bishop, you know, it's been, especially during, we were talking off air about this, but especially during the pandemic when our circles were just shrinking.
Correct.
And we didn't have a lot of opportunities to meet with one another and to, for there to be that kind of incarnational, okay, well, we're here together in a room. It was a wonderful way for us to get to know people.
Yep.
And so that's how it's been a blessing for you and me and our diocese, is that we've really expanded our circles in a time where they've been shrinking. We've met so many amazing mm-hmm. people, and after every show that we do, we always tell our guest, you know, this conversation's not over.
Correct. We hope that it continues.
Keep in touch.
Right.
And so, you know, we want to keep in touch with the people that we talk to, because we believe in their work and we believe in their testimony. And that's why we've tried to really push out ways that our community and the people who are listening can engage with them
mm-hmm.
and support them, or, you know, follow them, because mm-hmm. because we need our circles. We need our communities.
Yeah. So in the early years of Faithfully Memphis, the early days, you know, Emily hadn't really produced anything like this, and I don't have any experience in radio, and I certainly didn't know what I was doing. It was a little bit like the blind leading the blind those initial months, right?
Well, since we're doing shout outs, we need to give a major shout out to Shelby McCall.
Oh, yes.
Good grief. Here at Gil Worth,
yep.
all these folks who really helped us to figure out what the heck we were doing.
Like, how do you use the soundboard? How do you patch music in if we were going to do the interview via Zoom? So you're hearing us over the radio. Sometimes the other person that I'm interviewing is not in the room. They're being patched in via Zoom. So the whole technological aspect of it has been a learning curve for all of us. And in those initial months, it was just like, let's brainstorm people that either we think the diocese wants to hear from, or the larger community wants to hear from, or somebody that I had always wanted to interview.
Mm-hmm.
And so after doing that from October of 2020 through December of 2021, so over a year of that, this January, we started having a series to go in depth on particular issues. And I really like the scope of the show now. So this year, for example, we had a series on creation care. Mm-hmm. We had a series of shows on how to support children and youth.
And those supporting
children and youth during challenging times. We are preparing to have a series on the structure or the polity of the Episcopal Church so that people can learn more about that. Yeah, Emily, and share a little bit about sort of the genesis of moving to themes.
Well, Bishop, as with most of the creative work that I do, it was a lot of self-serving stuff for me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's self-serving. I love these one-off shows. We're kind of in a season where we're right now on Faithfully Memphis. We're doing a few one-off shows as we prepare for the series that are coming up later this summer and in the fall. But I'm the kind of learner that I want to dive deep.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear about something from multiple angles. I want to hear about the way that it informs lots of different conversations. And I think that I think that other people want to hear that too. If y'all ever see any kind of marketing or stuff that comes out of the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, I am my own ideal customer. I like to create content that is cohesive, mm-hmm. and there's a little bit of cohesion to it, and I like to bring in lots of diverse people to talk on a topic. So I think we've had those series well received, and I've learned a lot. I think we've both learned a lot, and we're getting better at bringing in people who have really pertinent things to say, and meaningful, important things to say on certain topics like creation care. I mean, we're not done talking about that.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we're not. It is not a one and done thing. These are conversations that are going to be going on for a long time. And I think that, you know, just thinking about themes, we're living in an era right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I don't know that I'm the person to do it, but I'm keeping my ear to the ground to hear from people who are experts and can speak with wisdom and knowledge about living in this post-pandemic era.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we're coming out of a group trauma, you know.
We are, that we haven't even begun to really process. We have more than a million deaths now in the United States alone from COVID.
Yeah, it's
unfathomable.
It's surreal.
Yeah.
It's surreal. But at the end of the day, for me, and I believe this to be true for our listenership and the people who have learned about us and have learned, you know, whether those are people who knew nothing about who we are as a faith community, mm-hmm. here in Memphis, or people who have been in this faith community their entire lives, I think that we're meeting a lot of new people,
mm-hmm.
and we're fostering that community.
Yep.
It's at the end of the day, it's all about community.
Yep.
It's all about listening, intentionally listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned creation care. That was our first sort of series of shows at the mm-hmm. beginning of this year. And I have to say that pretty much since March, most of the diocesan staff have attended an in-person conference.
Yeah.
So we are starting to travel. One of the great things about our denomination is there are lots of opportunities to network with people from other parts of the church who are doing similar work so that we're not reinventing the wheel, so that we're learning best practices, so that we're enhancing our own skill set. So I know that you recently returned from a communications conference, our Canon to the Ordinary, our diocesan administrator, and our canon for finance and administration. All three of them have recently participated in conferences with other folks in other dioceses doing their job as well.
And you've had the opportunity to finally get in a room with the other bishops.
Correct. The House of Bishops met in March of this year for the first time in person in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
But to go back to the creation care issue and the good thing about the Anglican Communion being part of such a large network is that roughly every 10 years, there is a conference called the Lambeth Conference that is organized by the Archbishop of Canterbury. Our current Archbishop of Canterbury is Justin Welby, and he decides the invitation list. He decides the program. He decides the theme. Care of creation is a primary emphasis of this upcoming Lambeth Conference, which, you know, God willing, and COVID numbers don't go way up, will be in England in August. Because if you think about the sorts of issues that we're seeing here in the United States, these very drastic changes in weather patterns with either extreme flooding or extreme drought or just the veracity of these storms, it's affecting the entire world. Yeah. And so what are our Anglican, Episcopal siblings, family members in parts of Latin America and Central America or parts of Africa or parts of Asia, what are they experiencing?
Yeah.
What have they learned that, you know, I might be able to benefit from and bring back to West Tennessee?
That's right. We're all working on getting back on the same page. Those conversations are so important.
Yep.
They really are. You know, you mentioned I just came back from the Episcopal Communicators Conference. It is since the 1950s, there has been a cohort of people working in communication ministries in the Episcopal Church, which parishes and diocesan and other ministries, and we come together and we just, and yeah, I mean, we go to some plenary sessions and we do some, you know, some workshops and stuff to, you know, to learn, but so much of it are those conversations that you have with people who are experiencing the same joys, the same highs and the same lows, and we are confronting the same problems. We are confronting the same opportunities, and you know, sometimes we don't. When opportunity avails itself, we don't really. Sometimes we don't know to recognize it, and sometimes we don't know what to do with it. And so, just having those, being in community with those people and talking about, where are we going? Are we all on the same page? Are we the same groups and the same people that we were prior to this pandemic and this chapter of our human history that has been so much to reckon with? And I mean, and in my experience, I think that we are, thank God. One of the conversations that it became really obvious to me a couple weeks ago when I was in Savannah for the Episcopal Communicators Conference, one of the things that became obvious to me from the very moment that I arrived and started speaking to people and getting to know people who I'd only known over Zoom and phone calls and emails for the last several years, is that I gotta go back to evangelism. How can we as communicators, mostly not clergy, we're not ordained, how can we be supporting the people in positions like you, and how can we be aiding our parishioners and our other laity and people within our faith communities to embolden them to share the love of God.
Right.
That is what it came down to.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we have all wrestled with a lot.
Yep.
The number one question I get And when I shared with people that we were going to be talking about these topics on the show today and saying, hey, if you want to formulate some questions for us to address, the number one general question that I got was, what role does social media need to play in today's religious education? And how does the church imagine evangelism in an era of digital technology?
Those are huge questions.
And we're figuring it out.
We're
doing it. Yeah. And, you know, you and I shared this with you a few days ago that I think as Episcopalians, you know, we are kind of, we do have this image of being stoic people. Mm-hmm. We're people who like our Book of Common Prayer. We like the way that we've done things. I like the way that we do things. But that has, the fruit that that is born is that we are a little bit, we're not as loose.
Mm-hmm.
And I've shared with you how, you know, we as a people tend to say, oh, well, we just suck at this. We're just bad at it. It's like, okay, maybe we used to be, but we don't have to be anymore.
Right, right.
We have an amazing thing to offer. We have a church that is welcoming and a church that is tolerant and a church that encourages you to ask questions. We have something really beautiful to share, and we have the expertise to do it well in these new media.
Mm-hmm.
And we're figuring it out, right?
We are. You know, I think that we have, Episcopalians are known for beautiful liturgy, beautiful buildings. Mm-hmm. We're normally identifiable by our red doors.
Red doors.
And our faithful flock gather, not just on Sundays, but during the week, behind those red doors and patiently wait for new people to walk through.
Yeah.
And I think in an earlier era of American culture, there were a lot of people walking through all kinds of doors. And we're just in a different phase of life communally as Americans. I think if you look at the research, Americans are less likely to officially join all kinds of organizations. And then to the extent that the church, that organized religion in general, is perceived as being judgmental or hypocritical, or if people have been wounded by any church, they're not going to walk through the doors on their own. And so those folks who study church trends, some of them suggest that what organized religion in general may need is a return to some of the earliest practices of Christianity. How did the good news, the gospel of Jesus Christ, spread? It spread because initially, not just the 11, because, you know, Judas died before Jesus was resurrected, not just the 11 and also those in the inner circle who knew Jesus personally, they went out and told others. And then the people that they brought in, they went out and told others. I mean, Christianity did not spread because people stayed behind doors of beautiful buildings, right?
Yeah.
So if we as Christians are concerned about the decline in church attendance, in participation, in a lot of these things, one of the questions that, you know, I ask myself, when is the last time I invited someone to church? When is the last time that I shared my work with the Episcopal Church with a total stranger? Now, of course, I'm in an unusual position that a lot of people recognize me, and I get asked that question. But for our lay folks, when is the last time we've shared?
Exactly. And when was the last time that you felt like you could share, but you didn't for some reason?
Right.
You know, what do we have to lose?
Hey, I love that approach. What do we have to lose? If the person says, no, thank you, I already have a church home, or no, thank you, I really don't want to hear about that, then that's fine. You haven't lost anything. But if the person is curious and wants to learn more, how amazing is it that we can be co-partners, co-creators with God in sharing this good news?
That's right.
It's a privilege.
It is. It is. And even if maybe the quote unquote pitch,
mm-hmm.
like, hey, why don't you come to church with me? Or, hey, why don't you come and do this with my fellowship group? Or, hey, why don't you?
Or if there's a service project that your church is doing, you can invite them to do something that's not even on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. And I think that we're also trying a lot of new things. Mm-hmm. On social media.
Yes.
You know, before the pandemic, none of our churches in the Diocese of West Tennessee were live streaming services.
Correct.
And now they are.
Many of them are.
Now, many of them are.
And,
and the beautiful thing that we're seeing as a result of that is that when the doors were opened
mm-hmm.
again, some of those people were coming to church and entering into, you know, fellowship,
who learned about us online.
And that's a fairly I reflect on that thinking, well, why did we start live streaming it in March of 2020? Well, mm-hmm. it was to bring church to the people that were already there.
Exactly.
We're already there. And which we did. And it was wonderful, and I'm really glad that we were able to continue serving. But I'm also reminded, and I cannot remember who said this, but the church is the only organization and one of the only institutions that exists for people who are not yet members yet.
That's correct.
And if it's so passive to just, you know, throw a service up on Facebook or on YouTube or whatever, and then glean people who were searching and people mm-hmm. who were looking for a community, how much easier is it to start thinking about the ways that our church programming, things that we have done for the, you know, hundreds of years, can how we can create platforms on social and where those programs are lifted up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much of what I do, all I do is create content.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're really working to create content and going on those platforms where the people are. You know, there's so many churches, and I'll shake my finger, I'll wag my finger at them that say, oh, you know, we don't have the bandwidth to do Facebook, and we don't have the bandwidth to do Instagram and TikTok. And I get that. We don't have an endless bandwidth either. But that's where people are.
Mm-hmm.
That's where people are right now.
Yep.
And I love to see how we can use these creative tools to create community. So I think that there's a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, what I do for a living is communicate with people.
Correct.
But I really see these platforms as being beautiful things that can draw people together.
Yep. So that brings us full circle to this show. And we are now a year and a half in, and it has been not just a great evangelism opportunity for our diocese, but we've learned so much from doing it. And so we really do want to thank you all as our listening audience for hanging in there with us and for finding value in this work.
Yeah, and continue to send us feedback. Continue to send us questions and prompts. What are you thinking about? Who should we have on the show? I mean, this show serves us as much as it serves you,
mm-hmm.
and we want to grow along with you. We want to walk in community with you. And so thank you to everybody who listens.
We want to thank you for listening to another episode of Faithfully Memphis. Just a reminder that you can hear this radio show not only on WYXR 91.7 FM, but also any of the places where you hear podcasts, including Apple Music and Spotify. So listen to us on those platforms. And
like and subscribe.
Yes, that helps us
Yep. I got to pipe in like and subscribe because leave us a review, because when you leave us a positive review, the magical algorithms they love that. And then, helps us expand our reach.
So we wanted to give you a heads up about the next couple of weeks. Next week, the Reverend Paul McLean, Associate Rector at Calvary, will be interviewing the Executive Director of Literacy Mid-South. Earlier this year, the Diocese of West Tennessee, through the Church Home Trust, gave a substantial grant to Literacy Mid-South to help close the educational gap between sort of where students should be and where they are, caused or exacerbated by COVID. And so Paul is going to give us some information not only about the purpose of that grant and how Literacy Mid-South is using it, but also opportunities for volunteers to get involved in that important ministry. And then the following week, I will be interviewing Autumn Chastain, who is the new executive director of Thistle and Bee, a ministry of the diocese that serves women who have been victims of human trafficking and drug use. So until next week, family, stay safe and stay positive.